StartupRad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRad.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany. Right now, I'm bringing to you another hardware startup dealing with blockchain, which is actually from Belgium, from Brussels, but it is part of the Accelerator Frankfurt batch right now here in Frankfurt. So I'm bringing you this in part of our media partnership. If you like what you see, what you listen to, go down here and hit the like and subscribe button wherever you're listening to this podcast or YouTube video. And you can now support us on Patreon. Go down here in the show notes. You'll find a link to subscribe to us and support us. That's it. Welcome, Ruben.
Hey, Jürgen, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Great. And thank you for being there. And thank you for making the time on a Saturday afternoon. I know you have busy life, so do I. We'll be getting a little bit into everything we just discussed because you are from Belgium, from Brussels. I love the... Every time I'm in Brussels, it feels like I'm coming back like 2 or 3 kilograms heavier because they have amazing Belgian chocolate and wonderful, wonderful beer that I really love. And it's also a very nice city, even though admittedly very sparse in ATMs. But you have to know that and you have to deal with it. It's actually not too far away from high-speed train from either Paris or Frankfurt, and you can get there pretty soon and pretty easily. So, what made you go out of Brussels into Frankfurt? And by the way, what did you do before?
All right. So, which question do you want me to ask for answer first, the Frankfurt one or the other one?
Well, let's start at the beginning because I've been stalking you a little bit on LinkedIn. By the way, everybody who's listening to this or watching this, you can go down here in the show notes and get straight to his LinkedIn profile. I can see you've been a consultant as well as a bestseller online investment instructor on Udemy. What did you do there and how did you get to do that?
On Udemy, you mean? So I'm kind of the lifelong learner type, meaning that after my studies of business engineering, or like they say in Germany, Wirtschaftsingenieur, I started working as a strategy consultant, did a lot of international projects. But at the same time, I also realized that I could actually study in parallel with my job. So but meanwhile, by now, I have around 6 postgraduate degrees that I earned over the time that I was working and studying at the same time. And one of the degrees I got was focused more on investment topics. And as I learned a lot in a couple of years about really investing, did it myself very actively, beat the stock market, also built a lot of dividend growth portfolios, I realized that I also wanted to share that knowledge and, let's say, also monetize that knowledge. And so what I did was I went to Udemy in 2014, so really at the very beginning of the platform. And I made my first course. It was called How I Consistently Beat the Stock Market. And then after that one, I took all the learnings from like, what did I do wrong in the first course? Or what could I have done better? And I made a second one called The Ultimate Guide to Dividend and Dividend Growth Investing. And that one became a bestseller in 2015 or 2016. And so for me, it became sort of a passive income source because I was continuously on the lookout to these either small but also larger entrepreneurial endeavors. And I would say like this is one of the things that I did years ago. You can still find the course. You can still subscribe to the course. You can still take the course. I will still be answering your questions. But for me, it's today, obviously, it's a bit more in the background as I am working on this beautiful company called Engrave today.
You are also admittedly the first other founder and blogger I have here because you're contributing author at Hacker Noon, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So I actually also like to write a lot. And in the beginning, that was mostly for Hacker Noon. And the topics were mostly on blockchain, on cryptocurrencies, on what's wrong with specific mechanisms to raise funds in the current blockchain space. As you know, in 2018, suddenly, Bitcoin went up from $1,000 to $20,000 in a couple of months. And everything else followed, and people could make 10 to 100x on an investment, or let's say more on a speculation. And I started to cover those topics as well, but more from a fundamental perspective than from a let's go and become rich quick scheme. But if you nowadays you're still looking, let's say for my write-ups, you just have to go to the Engrave blog. So blog, it's medium.com/engrave, and you will see that it's Engrave writing it, but it's actually obviously it's me who's writing it, and I'm still writing something like every couple of weeks.
We've already touched the topic of Engrave, but we'll get to that soon. First, we try to educate our audience a little bit because Belgium is not really a monolithic country. It's actually consisting of a Dutch part, Flemish part, and Wallonia, a French-speaking part, and I've heard there's even a tiny German-speaking part in there, right?
Yeah, I would say, so Belgium is around 10, 11 million people. 6 million of them are like from Flanders, like speaking Dutch, but the Belgian kind of Dutch, which is completely written exactly the same. It's just like the way we pronounce it is a bit different than in the Netherlands, but we have the same dictionaries. And so the whole north, let's say, of the company is Flemish. Then you have the south of the company, which is French-speaking. And then you have a tiny part that is like completely next to Germany. And there you have around a couple of 100,000 people who speak German. And the capital itself, there, everybody speaks everything. I'm from the capital, from Brussels. And Brussels is like right in the middle of the bottom of Flanders and the top of the Walloon region, the French-speaking region. But we all love waffles, we all love beer, and hopefully soon we will all love the product that Engrave brings to the market. It is also built with a lot of Belgian partners.
I see. For the audience, approximately 80% of our audience are made up of people living in the United States and the United Kingdom, but mostly for the people in the United States, how would one has to imagine a school in Belgium? You get one subject in one language, another subject in another language. How would it work?
Well, when you're like 10 years old, then you start learning French. And so it's dedicated classes purely to French. So it's not like you have to learn that there's an instructor or professor who starts teaching mathematics or something in French. It's just like you're 10, 11 years old. So the last 2 years of elementary school, that's when you start learning French. And then the 6 years in secondary school, high school, you actually keep learning French. So you have around 8 years of learning French if you're from Flanders. And it's more or less the same, but vice versa from the Walloon region. And we also start to learn English, I think, officially in school as when we are like 13 or 14. But I would say that most of the people at 13, 14 already know how to speak English because of the fact that in our country, there is no dubbing of videos, of films. So we look at series in the native language and it's subtitled. I know like in Germany, often there is like real dubbing and they speak in German. But for us, we don't have that. So that also allows us to easily acquire a language.
Not bad, not bad. We are talking today about Engrave or Engrave, all spelled in capital letters, I've learned. Can you tell us first a little bit, how did you get to this idea of Engrave? What did drive you to basically say, oh, that's a problem I want to solve. That's what the world needs. How did you get there?
Yeah, so I think we all have a bit of our own genesis stories with the three co-founders. I think one of the most compelling stories is the one of our CTO, Xavier. And why? Well, basically, he did a capital raise via blockchain technology called an ICO, an initial coin offering. Like in a traditional world, you have IPOs, initial public offerings, and there people can basically buy a stake or shares from your company. You could do something similar in the blockchain world back in 2016, and you could actually buy coins of a project. And the more that the network of the project was used, the more that the coins rose in value. And so they did an ICO with their project. It was called Swarm City at the time. And they raised around 76,000 Ether, so Ethereum, like the second biggest cryptocurrency. Bitcoin is the biggest. And so they raised 76,000 Ether, which is actually a lot of money. But in 2017, he opened up the balance, let's say, of the company. Like, this is all the money we have. And there should have been 44,000 Ether on the wallet, which was around $10 million. And it was all gone. Everything was gone. From the first to the last penny, it was an empty balance. So you can imagine that the shock that he felt at that moment was pretty enormous, because I don't know if you've lost ever in your life 10,000 euros, but that's also already a big shock, right? Imagine 10 million. So basically, that kind of messed up the whole project they were working on. But he remained like very luminous at the moment. And what he did was he partnered up with a couple of white hat hackers, so ethical hackers. And together, they found what the actual hack did. They automated it, and they stole over $200 million from 500 different blockchain projects. It also did ICOs. They did that because they wanted to protect these companies from the bad hackers, basically. And obviously, at the moment that they did it, it's always easy to say, okay, I just stole 10,000 euros from you, but I was going to give it back. So that was a bit of the finesse part of it. But luckily, it never came to that, because they really gave it back beautifully in time. And that really drove him to switch his mindset towards security and blockchain. It's a huge problem. And so back in 2018, the three co-founders of us, we came together and we just asked ourselves the simple question, what is the solution? Which solution in the world would we entrust our very first to our very last Bitcoin with? And we could not find the answer to that question. So at that moment, April 2018, we decided to build it ourselves. And just to still give you like the numbers today, 2018 was a record year in crypto stolen. $2.5 billion was stolen in 2018. And in 2019, even though the technology became better, the problem exploded even more. And the previous record was pulverized by 2019's whopping $4.5 billion. So that's only a few months ago. And we still see the same trend. Hacks are increasing in size, are increasing in frequency. And there are simply still, 2 years later, no solutions to really own your crypto the way it should be. But, and here comes the light part, that is that we took 2 years, the whole crypto winter actually, to build the first solution that we call it the first solution ever that allows you to start truly owning what is yours. So you become the true master of your assets, and there is nobody else who ever has an opportunity to get to your assets. And if you compare that, for example, with the traditional banking world, you actually never own anything, because they can say from one day to the next, you had 100,000 euros here, you say, I've never seen it. That's what centralized problem is. But even today in the existing cryptocurrency space, exchanges actually do the exact same thing. They have the secret keys to your portfolio. You just have a password to the platform. And so that's why they actually do so many exit scams, because they have the actual keys to your money. And so we try to take a step further to basically radically improve the security and ease of use for you to manage your digital assets and your cryptocurrencies. And that is what Engrave stands for.
So that means you actually provide like a physical place to store your money, like if you would have cash like in your mattress?
No. So the way you basically have to see it is, okay, you have all these hacks, 5 billion almost last year. So what is the root cause that that basically results in those hacks, right? And that's the first question we ever asked ourselves. And it all comes down to something that we call the private key paradox. And so what it means is that the one thing that makes blockchain so superior to all these other technologies is the fact that it is unchangeable. You cannot change a transaction that happened in the past and by basically just hacking it and changing the database. You can't do that because the database is owned by everybody. And so everybody has their same version of the truth on their computer. And if somebody singular says, I'm going to change something, everybody else will say, sorry, that doesn't correspond with my version of the truth. And the way that can still remain in that form is built purely on cryptography. And it's built on the best cryptography there is. But at the same time, so you have to imagine it as a wallet, a blockchain wallet. You can actually really easily compare it with a wallet on the bank. With a bank, you have an address. It's like an IBAN number, as they say, or an IBAN number. On the blockchain, they call it a public key. Your public key is your address. So that's where your Bitcoins are on. So if somebody knows your public key, they can send you Bitcoin. With a bank, you have your PIN code, device, and you have a second code that you have to make from that device. And that will give you access to what's on your bank account. That will allow you to do transfers and basically own your money. On the blockchain, you have a private key. And a private key is a sort of a cryptographic secret key. And that gives access to your public key. So it gives access to your Bitcoin on your wallet. So if I know your private key, I can go to your address and I can steal all your crypto. That's how it works. The beauty about private keys is that it's the strongest cryptography there is, meaning that if you do not know my private key, you can never brute force it. So you can never guess it, not even with a quantum computer. And the reason is because the range of private keys, in theory, is 10 to the 18th power. That's as big as there are numbers, there are atoms in the universe. So you're telling a computer, if he's trying to break your key, hey, I have an atom in my head somewhere in the other part of the universe. Which atom is it? And there isn't a quantum computer that even comes close to that kind of difficulty, that kind of level of brute forcing. And so that means that if you do not know my private key, you can never brute force it. So you can never steal my Bitcoin. But it also means that if I make my private key online and you are a hacker and you find it, you don't have to brute force it. You just have to find it, which is basically very easy to do. And that's why we call it the private key paradox. So it's the one thing that makes crypto or blockchain so secure, but it's also the Achilles heel of the entire system. And so what we did in the last 2 years is we removed the Achilles heel of the system. So if you use our solution, it is practically impossible that somebody steals your Bitcoin.
So basically, you've replaced the private key part.
Well, we asked ourselves the question, what is wrong today in the way that private keys are managed? And the answer is, we call it the box of Pandora, of crypto. What opens the box? What opens your private key to all these possible ways that people can steal it? And the answer is super simple. Internet, online. If there is any online touch point with your private key, hackers can find one or more tools in their toolbox and they can find your key. So we said the only way we can solve it is if we go completely offline. So we build this device. It's called the Engrave Zero. It is a hardware device. It looks a bit like a small smartphone, beautiful touchscreen, fits perfectly in your hand. And what we can do with that device, well, it is 100% offline. So it can never connect over USB. It cannot connect over Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, 4G. It's standalone. So it basically has an offline wall between itself and the online world. So hackers cannot attack it. And we are able to create your private key and your public key, so your address, that's somewhere in the blockchain universe. We can create it on our device. So we can basically create your Bitcoin account out of thin air. And we can guarantee you that nobody else in the world will ever have the same key. Will ever be able to brute force your key because it is as powerful as I just explained. And we also are able to keep your private keys offline throughout the entire management of your wallet. So you can say, I can sign transactions, I can send Bitcoin from myself to somebody else, I can receive Bitcoin, and nobody can steal the private keys because they're never exposed. And that's how we solve that private key issue.
When you've been talking about that, what I had in mind is a picture from a US movie, basically a big Faraday cage with a few computers in it, and that's where you produce the private keys there?
No, so in our solution, because what you're saying now, that is decentralized. So that would mean that if you would do it like that, we know your keys. And so every risk that is still existing today in the industry, because there are companies that work decades on making a key generation process, like they make chips specifically designed for building such a key. The problem is that these chips have been proven to have backdoors. So the national security authorities like the NSA or the CIA, they actually have backdoors in these processes. So what we do is we give you, regardless of whether you're an end user, an end consumer, like a B2C customer, or even a business, or even a government, we give you the device, and you basically turn it on with a simple on-off button. The device lights up, and you can create your key on the spot, real-time, with the device, and not only with the interior chip, but you also include external factors like the ambient light that surrounds you at that moment, your fingerprints, so your biometrics are also part of the key generation process. And so you actually make a key that is statistically unique. Nobody else will ever have the same key. It is unbreakable. You cannot brute force it. It is unpredictable. So it's made in a way that nobody else can ever do the same process and find your key. And it is made on the spot with you so that even the makers engrave, the manufacturer, has no idea of knowing what your key is. And for us, that is where true ownership starts. You are the only one who has ever seen the key to your wallet. And nobody else has a way to get to that wallet. And that's where it starts, but it's not where it ends. Where it ends, that's a whole other part of the equation. But we have built an end-to-end solution. So we start with that. We are able to manage your transactions. Well, you are able to manage your transactions. You don't need us. You don't need anybody else. And nobody can steal your keys. And we can go as far as the last question you have, which is, if I pass away tomorrow, how do my children get to my private keys? So we built basically the first end-to-end solution that can do all of these different steps.
Okay, let me quickly wrap this up. So basically, you change the private key generation to completely offline. You have one contribution to the private key is the chip, one contribution is the biometrics, and one contribution is the moment, like light, point in time, location, and so on and so forth, where you actually are doing the generation process. So that's the random element nobody can replace, right?
Well, the chip itself, it's called a true random number generator chip. So what it does is it already makes true random. Normally, these keys are already extremely strong. So the only problem with them is that there are backdoors. So that's why we add external factors to the mix, which your chip cannot predict. And therefore, there is no backdoor that can still know what your key is. And the last part we do in the key generation process is we show you your key. And then we have sort of an interaction happening between you and the key. So that during that interaction, you actually take out the risk that we as the manufacturer might know what your key is. Because if we just say, this is your key, we can fake everything and just basically know what your key is. We can have a database of all your keys. But if you make it yourself on the spot, you have the strong key, you adapt a couple of things in a controlled environment, then it becomes impossible even for us to know what your key is.
I see. That's very secure for the owner. But then you have, again, the problem of the loss, as you said, when I pass away, if a truck runs over me tomorrow. So basically, that would be the point where I say, okay, and how did you guys like solve this? If I pass away, how will my wife find my private key?
Exactly. So the thing is that there already exist solutions like the one we have, but they are like way, way, way less advanced. So the way they exist today is like they're USB sticks. You have to put them into your computer and you can create a key with a chip. And obviously, if you have to sign transactions and so on, you have to connect your USB stick. And basically, you are in an online environment. You're working in an online environment. So you have a lot of residual problems or challenges or attack factors. What we do is, like I just explained, and then you basically have to ask yourself the question, what if I lose my device? Do I lose my private keys forever? And the answer to that is yes, you lose them forever. However, because you know your key, you can make a backup. So the status quo, the existing solutions they give you literally, and that is completely mind-blowing if you think about the fact that blockchain is a new technology, everybody writes down their private keys on a piece of paper. And if they lose their device, they buy a new one and they enter their private key with their backup, which is paper. So if you just spill water on your backup, you lose your keys forever. So it's mind-blowing, but that is exactly even how it works with big exchanges. So what we do is we said we have to stop this antiquated way of thinking, but we cannot go electronical either, because if we do that, electronics can degrade. A USB stick with your private key on can basically break down tomorrow and you lose it. So we built a stainless steel backup, so one that can withstand 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. So if your house burns down, the thing is still there. It holds your private key. So you bring across the private key from your device to the plates. And we made it an encrypted puzzle so that if somebody finds your plates, they still don't know what your key is, because you have to know the mechanism of reconstructing your key from the two plates. And that means that we have invented a more durable backup. It is also the first encrypted backup in industry, and it is the first recoverable backup in industry. So if you lose it, we have a way of getting it to you again, but there is never a risk that we know what your key is. And I know that sounds really abstract, and it's actually really simple if you see the solution. But so basically, we can answer all these what-if questions. What if I lose my wallet? What if I lose my backup? What if I die tomorrow? What if this? What if that? So we always ask ourselves that question. And that is how you get to an end-to-end security solution. Most of these solutions just think about a singular aspect, and then it stops. For example, exchanges, they just think about, if I'm a secure exchange, then everything is okay. But you have to think end-to-end.
Do I get it right? Basically, you have a physical generator of really random keys, taking several aspects into account to make it really random. And then you have like a metal puzzle that allows you to do the backup again, which I've just looked it up, can resist more than 1,600 degrees Celsius. That means really strong heat if something burns down. Is that it?
Yeah, so you have to see it as the hardware wallet. It's capable of generating your key. That's where it starts. Then if you want to say, I want to send Bitcoin to somebody, then you can do that with the device. You can also receive Bitcoin. Nobody can ever steal your cryptocurrencies as long as you have those private keys on the device, and they never leave the device. So the $5 billion almost that were stolen last year, if everybody would be using our device, nobody would be stealing anything anymore. And then the next question is indeed, what do we do about these paper wallets? And for the end consumer, the best answer is to have such a stainless steel solution that indeed, if your house burns down, it will still be there. And if somebody else finds it, they don't know what to do with it. So that's why, in our case, it consists of two separate pieces. And one of the two pieces is specifically designed that it is always unique for any user ever buys one. And that unique part is able to decipher the full key. So you need to put them on top of each other. And then basically, you just see the key. And that is how that solution works. So we take away the durability aspect or problem of paper. We also take away the single point of failure problem. Like if somebody finds a normal metal plate and I have engraved my key, they still find your key just there. So in our solution, they don't find anything. They need two parts. They need to put them on top of each other, and then they see the key. So the only thing you have to do as an end user is keep those two keys separate physically from each other.
Hmm. I see. I've also been looking before we interviewed, and I do believe I'll add in here for everybody who's watching this as a video, a few peeks at pictures or video sequences from your guys' videos, at what it really looks like or how it could look like. As you said, metal parts are random. And I do believe everybody would like to learn more. They can go down here in the show notes. We'll have, of course, your website, your blog, as you mentioned, as well as your LinkedIn profile. Getting a little bit further ahead, at the time we're recording this, your Indiegogo campaign did not start. At the time this is published, really sorry, I have to work on a backlog, your Indiegogo campaign is already finished. So basically, first, can people still buy your device from your website?
Yeah, so during the campaign, people can buy it on Indiegogo. And the second that the campaign ends, you just go to our website and you will be able to buy it there.
Okay, and what are you guys looking for? Are you currently looking for venture capital funding?
Well, as an entrepreneur, you're always looking for venture capital funding. Well, at least you're always looking for fund, necessarily venture capital. But indeed, so we are currently, let's say, interested in doing a round in the second half of 2020. We want to do that after the crowdfunding campaign. The reason is because we are able to basically move the traction of our product and the demand by doing that. We also have a crowd lending campaign ready for after the summer. So we already have a partnership with a platform. And then during all that time, even during the campaign, the idea is that we talk to investors and also show them like the way we approach the full strategizing of these campaigns, of delivering our milestones. And for us, the goal is to do an venture capital round by the end of the year. And I think what's interesting is that we, at least for entrepreneurs, is that we really managed with a hardware company to keep such a round at bay for over 2 years. So we were able to do something which you can call a FinMix. And I think you should always do that. Make yourself a funding roadmap. And don't just think about venture capital, but think about all the possible ways of funding. So you can have grants here, you can have grants there. We have backing from the European Commission through a grant. We have backing from our own government through a grant. We also convinced the financial institution to back this project. We have a grant from the Web3 Foundation, so the foundation that actually gives money to promising innovation projects in the internet space. And we also have... there's an equity stake from one of the biggest, from one of the world leading institutions for nanotechnology, because they were the first one we approached with our vision. We told them like, this is what we want to make. We want to do it with you. Why? Because we want to make the best product in the world. You are the best in your field. They are actually the company called IMEC that taped the first atom sized chip, so the first 3-nanometer chip in the world. And we said we need somebody like that to build a solution from scratch, because even the circuit boards, every component, we designed the whole solution from scratch so that it is indeed completely capable of making these complex cryptographic calculations and all, but also to make it physically tamper-proof so that it's also ready to go for B2B, B2G, like business to government. It's even a military applications, it can be used. So we were able to still keep like 88% of ownership until today. And now we are really proud on the fact that we can do our campaign and we can keep the VC round for after that, because not diluting yourself is so important when you have a startup.
I see. Can you enlighten us with one more answer? Because I've seen many, many startups who do hardware. I usually hear from them, hardware is hard, and they're somewhere failing in the area where they're getting somewhere their device, their item, their gadget manufactured, and then it doesn't work. The quality is not good enough. The customers complain. They have stuff sent back. People complain. They get a bad reputation, so it goes down the hill. How did you guys avoid that? What is your number one top tip for hardware startups?
Yeah, great question. And I think what I might add to that is that hardware is extremely hard. And we actually took the worst niche of all to be building a startup in, because we have the hardware aspect, we have the security aspect. We went for the highest security in the world, and we also earned it. We earned the only EAL7 certification in the world for it. And it's also a cryptocurrency company, right? So cryptocurrency is totally surrounded by this scammy vibe. Like, is this project real or is it just fake? So we have like a whole roller coaster of things that make it even worse in terms of being a company. And so what we did is we understood that from very early on, if we wanted to build the best product, we needed the best partners. So the first thing we did was we built our functional prototype. We built our business vision. We went to IMEC, the world leading research and development institute for nanotech. We showed them our solution. And they said, look, great, let's put you in our tech acceleration program, the number one tech acceleration program in Europe. And after a couple of months, they saw that we were not kidding around. And they said, okay, let's build this together. So we basically went into sort of a co-development partnership. And in the summer of 2018, we met with the world leading research group for cryptography. The guys who invented the encryption protocols in WhatsApp in the NSA's background, and basically the guys who also hacked the Tesla cars, and they became our security partner. And I think so one thing we really did well is we were able to surround this with the best partners in their field to build this solution, which you could not do if you would just take some random partner somewhere. And I think that basically comes down a bit to the aspect of building a team is one of the most challenging things you can ever do as a startup CEO. And it's the one thing you always have to be busy with. It always has to be in the back of your head. Which partner is an A partner? Which partner is an A partner, but only in a specific timing of the company or specific context of the company? And which partners should I completely avoid? And the learning we made there is we obviously also made wrong decisions. And the way you learn that is always the hard way. It costs you money or reputation or something else. But what we, I think what's really important in this hardware startup is the risk management aspect. And the way we also fixed that is we looked in the Asian countries, we looked also in Belgium, and we found that there were actually amazing partners with top quality in less than an hour away by car. And imagine there is a problem with your factory and you have to fly to China and then you have to fly back. And then they say there's still a problem, you have to fly back. It's completely impractical, especially if we're three co-founders like us. That's the team. So we decided that to take it on in Belgium, because we are talking about a quality product. And at the same time, it's not like the cost is exuberant. So it's still very, very manageable. But for us, it's the customer is the most important. The customer needs to get something that works, something that we can guarantee that works. And we need a good customer support. And it's really, really hard if you scare your business too much already from the very beginning. That being said, I do believe in the power of the Shenzhen community. If I see how fast they can prototype hardware, it's incomparable to anything in the world. So I really want to take that part of the chain. And I also want to take the bright minds of IMEC and of COSIC, like these cryptographers, and take the best of all these worlds to building our second solution, the follow-up solution for the Engrave Zero.
One more question. We've been talking in the past to William, who's a headhunter, and he says you make very, very important decisions, as you said, about hiring, building the team. You make very, very important decisions. The first people you're hiring, who you're not your friends, who you don't know very early on. So the first, like, strangers you are hiring, you set your startup up for success or failure with that. Would you agree with that?
I totally agree with that. I think your team is beyond doubt one of, if not the most important aspects of your business. Finding the right people, be it team members or business partners, is like a constant search for a needle in a haystack, and over and over again. And every time you make the wrong choice, it will cost you dearly. And as a CEO, you need to be continuous lookout for potential talent. You have to make these reflections constantly in the back of your head. And unfortunately, in the majority of cases, these people you would like to hire are just not what would work in your company. And I believe that so far we have done a good job on that, but that's mostly with the partners we surround ourselves with. Our team still has to grow significantly, and it will indeed be one of the biggest challenges we will face with the company.
Well, usually we run around 20 to 30 minutes. We are now very close to 40 minutes recording time. Everybody who'd like to learn more, go down here in the show notes. Of course, there are all the links. As we've said, remember, sharing is caring. And the only thing left for me to say, thank you very much, Ruben. It was a very enlightening interview.
It was an honor to be on the show, Jiren. Thank you.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.